Welcome to the Prosperity Podcast, fresh, alternative personal finance talk for independent thinkers who prosper outside of Wall Street. Here's your hosts, best-selling author Kim D.H. Butler and no BS money guy, Todd Strobel.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prosperity Podcast. This is no BS money guy, Todd Strobel. Once again, we have best-selling financial author Kim Butler with us again today. And we're going to be taking a look at what may be one of the greatest investors in history, Warren Buffett, who is sharing 9 of his secrets that he believes in. And it'll be interesting to kind of compare and contrast those 9 with Kim, because, I mean, Kim has not been investing as long as Mr. Buffett has, but she certainly has been around for a big chunk of his time. So it's not, you know, you guys have both been exposed to the same economy, as I suppose is what I want to say.
Yes, but I'm grateful that you acknowledge that I haven't been around quite as long as he has.
And the thing that I wonder if the advice that he's given out is more heavily based upon accumulation of what he's learned or what he projects will be in the future. I mean, I think it would be a natural tendency to automatically assume, but you're talking about one of the smartest human beings on earth here. So I don't think he's going to be behind by any means, but I just wonder how some of his will play out with, you know, quite frankly, the clients that Kim is working with, and Kim herself have a different life trajectory than he does. Is that fair enough to say?
Absolutely. Well said. Very smoothly said.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get in here and find this here real quick. It's called 9 Investing Steps from Warren Buffett's Playbook. And this was actually published in U.S. News and World Report on May the 2nd, 2017. It was written by a guy by John Devine, if anybody needs to know. I think Warren Buffett he is considered the father of what's called value investing. Number one, and I will go along with this 100%, study the best.
That's interesting. Study the best. So I'll want to elaborate on that, because I think you want to define for yourself first what the best is. Like, are you looking for the best investment that's going to grow? Are you looking for the best investment that's going to create cash flow? Are you looking for the best investment short term, long term? And I believe that there are definitely differences among those various areas. And I'm also not sure that it's humans or human being actions that are giving us, quote, the best. I think sometimes the underlying asset is the best. So we want to just be thoughtful about what we're studying. That being said, yeah, absolutely. Why would you bother studying what doesn't work? And although, just literally as that's coming out of my mouth, I think that is valuable. Sometimes we should be studying what doesn't work. So I'm going to go with yes, study the best, but maybe you study some other things as well.
One of the other things they point out in this article, and I'm attracted to these naturally, but I never thought of it as studying, is to read all of the shareholder letters you can get your hands on.
Interesting. And see, right there, that's just indicative that he's clearly, as we knew he would be, focused on the stock market as, quote, a definition of investing. And there's just so many more other additional investment environments that have no such thing as a shareholder letter.
Right. What's cool about a shareholder letter, though, is that's one of the things they have to do is they have to define the market in the future. So it's, you know, you are getting a snapshot, if you will, of the picture they've taken in their mind of what is in the future. And, you know, shareholder letters from pretty smart and intelligent people, I'm sure that you could learn something there.
Absolutely. Great additional thought.
Next one, study the pitfalls.
Oh, you were tricking me. Okay, so yes. Absolutely. Great suggestion.
No strategy is without flaws, and buying and hold equity is no exceptions. One of the most common critics of the book is that the fundamental outlook, even the long-term outlook of a company, can change. I would say it says can change. I would say the fundamental outlook for every company will change. I mean, I'm that confident that change is always been part of our environment, but it has been spaced out, and the time gaps between major changes are getting faster and faster and faster, where I believe whether your company's 100 years old or 30 minutes old, you've got to be looking and being prepared to move and change and do something different.
Absolutely. I was just thinking of Kodak and how they're actually the ones that developed the digital camera, but didn't realize that they had it and poo-pooed it, just absolutely didn't think it was going to have any capability at all. And now they're literally out of business just because they weren't paying attention. So yes, you always need to be looking at change, and we're not always going to know what that change is or how it's going to come about or what it's going to bring, but we can at least still be looking.
Our next step is investigate sustainable competitive advantages. Oh, I like this word.
Yeah, that's very well said. So the sustainable part is very interesting. And again, if you're looking long term, that's going to be super critical. Competitive advantages, that's, I think, just part of an inherent aspect of investments. And yet, we've talked many times on this podcast about the importance of win-win, or even win-win-win, you know, a triple win for the investment. In other words, there's lots of people that benefit from it. So does that still have a competitive advantage? Absolutely. You have to go back and ask the question, which is my all-time favorite. It's from Daniel Pink, and it's compared to what? So your competitive advantage is maybe not just within that industry or that particular style of company, but it's within that style of investing. And then it's that style of investing compared to other styles of investing. And what are the advantages and disadvantages? I'm guessing we might be getting to that next, of that particular style of investing compared to the whole world of other investing, not just, for example, company A versus company B.
Yeah, and I think so much more, I'm starting to get an immense respect for the brain trusts that some of these, you think of them as product oriented, but really and truthfully, they're not. They have a brain trust of people that has effectively got their fingers on the pulse of what people don't even know they want yet, and a confidence enough in themselves to commit to things that we don't know we know yet, and enough cash to pull it off.
It is impressive, isn't it?
Margin of safety.
Elaborate.
To simply snap up good-looking stocks because they're competitive without investigating if they have a margin for error. In other words, you know, if something breaks down in production or there's a defective part on your first million units that has to be replaced, you know, what do you do? Do you have somewhere that you can have that safety amount of cash? You know, maybe it gets, you know, one, another country, you know, holds it up because of health reasons or causes seizures or something like that. There can be a numerous things, even weather related. Look at the hurricanes, that you have to have, you know, a little staying power while you're getting even what the market wants to them. You're the one that's going to have to foot the bill while it's on hold.
Absolutely. And it's why we have preached so much about also having liquidity and about how liquidity is not an investment. In other words, storing cash like an emergency opportunity fund is not an investment or not investing. And yet it enables us to invest and it supports our investing, because that's what gives us sustainability, truly, is that liquidity, that backup plan, that Part B, or the idea of the emergency opportunity fund, such that if a particular investment doesn't come through in the time frame that we had thought, we're not forced to liquidate other investments in order to make up for that. It is amazing the protection that having cash can give all of your other investments.
And this kind of leads us to the next one, and it's, are you liquid?
This is pretty funny, especially since I did not know the nine that were coming. I keep accidentally, I guess, opening the door, because it's just the way I think, this both sides of the story environment. And so good for him. Tell me a little bit more about what he says about that.
Becoming an expert investor of any sort requires one non-negotiable prerequisite: capital. And not just a little bit of capital, but enough to hypothetically lose what you invest and live without it.
Interesting. So for a lot of our clients, that really isn't feasible. And yet some of them lost half of it in 08. So to me, they must absolutely find investments that are not going to cause decimation of principal. It's so important to me that principal not be at risk. And people like Warren Buffett can absolutely afford to have their principal at risk. And consequently, they can take on, quote, more risky investments that have the opportunity to hit one out of the park, as they say. But we, as your basic American people or Canadians or who, you know, whoever's listening, have to identify investments that are not going to have that kind of potential, because we don't want them to have the downside. And we must remember, as Todd Langford, my husband, likes to say, that risk is the chance of loss. Risk is not the ability to hit one out of the park. Taking on risk is the epitome of being willing to lose. And so that's why we talk in our environment about a zero risk tolerance, because we're not willing to lose. And it is rare to find investments that do that, but we found them.
All right. Our next one is be emotionally ready. I'm going to kind of warm you up on that one a little bit. It's just that the stock market, and I would say any investment place, requires serious emotional chops to stick it out over the long run without selling in a time of panic.
So interesting. You know, one of my favorite things to tell our clients when we're talking about the types of investments that we work with, many of which are not the norm, is that their biggest risk is going to be that emotional side. Their own confidence in what they're doing, when their friends, as an example, say, "You did what? You invested in where? Oh my gosh, that's immoral, illegal," you know, myriad of terms that get applied to the various types of alternative investments that we like. So yeah, I absolutely agree, but I'm probably expanding my definition of emotionally ready to include, I guess, what I would call like societally ready. Like, you need to be willing and able to deal with society and their opinions about the types of investments, or don't share it with them.
Correct. Because I mean, the internet, I mean, it was such a wonderful thing for so long, but now you can literally make it say anything you want to. I mean, if you type in the most ridiculous thing, you'll find some 72,000 websites that agree with it. It's crazy.
Yep.
All right, we're on our last one. And that, and this is my favorite one, by the way. Don't waver unless your thesis changes.
Interesting. Yeah.
In other words, you know, we start at the beginning when we build with our clients and we talk about beliefs and we talk about where they are and where they want to go and the tools. Then we start talking about tools. And when we're moving forward, maybe we find that there's a better tool. Maybe we find one of the tools we used didn't work as well as we thought it would. But it does that necessarily change the core map that we started with? And the answer could be yes or no. And I think that's what you need to be prepared to do is that, you know, am I tweaking my tools or am I making a major shift in my strategy?
Absolutely. Yep. And there's nothing wrong with either. Just, I think, be conscious of what you're doing, but also remember what he says, which is to go back to the beginning. And that's when we get clear. And I hear all the time, clients will commit to a certain time frame and a particular structure. Well, you know, let's say it's, okay, I understand I'm in there 10 years and nothing's going to happen to the fourth year. And then at the second year, they're asking why they haven't gotten any results. Well, they've forgotten that it was not until the fourth year that they were going to actually see results. And so we need to be really conscious of when we start things and what the time frame is, and be willing to stay the course.
Absolutely. Kim, what would be a good resource for folks who want to read more about this kind of stuff?
Well, we've hinted at quite a bit of our alternative investing work in this talk. And so I want to let everybody know that we have a book that's dedicated specifically to that information, as well as the alternative place that we like to store our cash for liquidity. And it is called The Financial Planning Has Failed Book. And so it is only available on our website, and it is partners4prosperity.com/ebook. There is a booklet, a audio version as well, if people prefer that. It's an immediate download, and it's not available on Amazon. So partners4prosperity.com/ebook.
Awesome. I think that's some great information. Again, Warren Buffett, we have all the respect in the world for what he has managed to accomplish. Unfortunately, I think those of us going forward neither have the assets that Warren does, or are going to have the same opportunities that Warren did. So for better or worse, we're all here to start and do it our own way. And we love sticking together with you guys and trying to come up with as much information as we can share with you. And this is a Prosperity Podcast, and we'll see y'all again real soon.
Thank you for listening to the Prosperity Podcast. To take control of your money and have it work for you, visit us at partners4prosperity.com. If you liked this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review.